Last Sunday, we started sharing some thoughts that we've felt burdened about on behavior. I'd like to just read through a little summary or try to summarize what I was trying to say last Sunday. And I trust that what I say in my summary is what you got out of it. But anyway... The first point I tried to make was that God wants His plan of salvation to be demonstrated to everyone that comes in contact with a Christian. That's God's intention. And another point that we tried to make was that the love of God does not misbehave. The Scripture talks about it. does not behave itself unseemly. It doesn't misbehave. And a point that we tried to make was that we all have behavioral expectations for others, whether they be gender or age or whatever. The specification is we have expectations. We have expectations for those that are considered adults and those that are not considered adults. Behavior, we read this definition, is a manner of behaving, whether good or bad. It means conduct, means manners, means carriage of oneself with respect to propriety or morals. It means deportment. It expresses external appearance or action. In other words, it's something that's demonstrated where we can see. Sometimes in a particular character, more generally in common duties of life. So behavior is what we exhibit day in, day out. Someone made the comment about habits earlier. And our habits... many times exhibit behavior. Someone can have a habit of maybe scratching their ear or pulling their hair or something like that, and it's a behavioral exhibit. You start picking up and you just recognize that maybe when someone is feeling pressure or feels nervous, they might begin to stutter or something like that. So there's behavior, there's things that you can discern about that. We talked about age, behavioral being categorized by gender, by age, by station, which means our position or level of responsibility in life. Also about our profession or lack thereof of Christianity. So people that are non-Christians have behavior too. And people that are Christians, there's a classification there. We expect Christians to behave within a parameter, and then we have other expectations for people that are not Christians. We also tried to make the point that our behavior is our own personal responsibility. It's not his responsibility. It's not her responsibility. It's my responsibility. My behavior is my responsibility. We also read a scripture about David changing his behavior, and he changed that to try to be to his own advantage, to try to avoid persecution and possibly some conflict. He changed his behavior. The last point that we tried to cover is behavior can either build or destroy us in the eyes of other people. My behavior will cause other people to either think highly of me, more highly of me, or it will cause other people's opinion of me to be deteriorated. So today, since this is church and we're not on the job or something like that, We're going to talk about the behavior of a Christian. We're going to try not to talk about gender. We're going to try not to talk about age. But we want to just talk about the behavioral things that should be manifest by a Christian. And when we go beyond this, I want to address some things that's age specific, and I want to address some things that are gender specific, and I want to do this from here on out. We're not trying to talk about behavioral expectations of people that are not professing to be Christians. All of us here that have a profession of salvation, we're professing to behave like Christians. But some of us are men and some of us are women. Some of us are older and some of us are younger. But ultimately we want to come under the first classification of being a Christian. So I'd like to turn, with that being said, to Psalms, the 19th chapter, and I want to begin reading in the first verse. It says here, "The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament sheweth His handiwork. Day unto day uttereth speech, and night unto night sheweth knowledge. There is no speech nor language where their voice is not heard. Their line is gone out through all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. In them hath He set a tabernacle for the sun, which is a bridegroom coming out of his chamber, and rejoices as a strong man to run a race. His going forth is from the end of heaven, and his circuit unto the ends of it, and there is nothing hid from the heat thereof. The law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The statutes of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. More to be desired are they than gold, yea, than much fine gold. Sweeter also than honey and the honeycomb. Moreover, by them is thy servant warned, and in keeping of them there is a great reward. Who can understand his errors? Cleanse me, thou me, from secret faults. Keep back thy servant also from presumptuous sins. Let them not have dominion over me. Then shall I be upright, and I shall be innocent from the great transgression. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer." Now this is poetry. David wrote this, I believe, and he is a poet. David is a man that is, we would say, musically inclined. And he had a lot of inspiration to write poetry. I am not a poet. If I say something that sounds poetic, that sounds like it rhymes, or sounds like a proverb, it's merely a coincidence. I don't feel that I have a talent to be a poet. But David did. And the Lord used David to write many of his observations down poetically, and it's a blessing for us today. And David here, I believe, he paints this picture with words of the glory of God, the magnificence of His creation, and how it testifies to us all around of His beauty, of His excellence, of His magnificence. Of how His laws are right and His laws are just. And he comes down to the end of this poem, if we want to call it that, this little chapter in the Bible, and he says he has a desire in his own heart, in his own spirit, that the Lord would help him be acceptable and be able to fit in with God's creation, because mankind has fallen. We have a depraved nature from birth, and I'm so thankful for the plan of salvation, not just a forgiveness of my committed sins, but a full salvation where that the Lord's Spirit would want to dwell in my being and be in me day in, day out. I'm so grateful for that opportunity. The last verse I want us to focus on a little bit here. He says, "Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer." If my words in the meditation of my heart is acceptable in the sight of the Lord, it's going to impact my behavior. And one of the greatest desires that a true Christian has is to be like Christ. We have a song in our book that says, "More like Christ," do we not? And this is something that is the heartfelt, sincere desire of Christians. We get the word Christian from the last part of that word in our English language means that we are we're from that place, or we're like those people. If you're a Missourian, that last part of that word means that you're either like those people, or that's where your home is, that's your residence. When I moved to Oklahoma, it wasn't long and they began to call me the hard-headed Missourian. Well, sometimes I think they were trying to compliment me, and other times I think they meant it derogatorily. But anyway, this Christian means that we should be Christ-like in our behavior. And David said, he says, "Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable. Let my behavior be acceptable in your sight." So I trust today that that is your desire. I want you to know that that is my desire. I'd like for us to turn to number 253 in our book, this psalm. Here has some words I want us to get a hold of. I'd like to read the beginning in the second verse of number 253. It says, "When the heart is sad and lonely and the eyes with tears overflow, gentle words and deeds of kindness fall like sunbeams on the snow. Let us help our fallen brother, lift him gently by the hand, speaking words of cheer and comfort, point him to a better land." He's not talking about moving to a different country physically. He's talking about a different land spiritually, a different land emotionally. He says, speaking words of cheer and comfort, point him to a better land. "In this world of toil and sorrow, many hearts are full of care. Let us live to serve our Master and each other's burdens bear." And the last part I want to read here is the chorus of this song. It says, "Kind and loving to each other, gentle words to" who? "To all we meet." Gentle words to all we meet. "Thus we follow Christ our Savior, proving all His service sweet." I wonder sometimes if the writer of this song had been meditating on this poetry of David. David said, "Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord." And this songwriter says, "Kind and loving to each other, gentle words to all we meet." If we are going to exhibit Christian behavior, our words need to be softened with gentleness to all that we meet. Not just the ones at church, and not just the ones that we come in contact with, that we live next door to, but to all we meet. Gentle words to all we meet. "Thus we follow Christ our Savior." We want to be a Christian. We want to be recognized. We want to be accepted as a Christian. And we're going to follow Christ. Then we must be able to exhibit gentle words. Yes, we have to say some words sometimes that are not in agreement with other people. But there is an element of gentleness, I believe, that the Lord wants us to have in all of our words. If you have to say something, we're talking about Christian behavior this morning. If you have to say something that's opposing what someone else has did or said, I trust that every one of us has to stop and think about how am I going to say this. All of us have been guilty of speaking too soon, too sharp, and wished we hadn't said it like that. Because we've seen the injury that had happened. True Christian behavior is this, that we would stop and think about what I'm fixing to say. Lord, I can't agree with what somebody just said. That's opposing what I believe is right. Or that was offensive. What they did was offensive to me. But how do I approach this? How does my words be softened with gentleness? I don't want to come across with something so emphatic that it's crushing to someone else. And the last thing I want to do is allow my words to start a fight, a physical fight. You know, there have been people that have got into fist fights many, many times over the years because of how they said something. Somebody responded to what somebody else said, and instead of verbally responding, they hauled off and smacked them with their fist. And then they had a knockdown drag out. Dear ones, a Christian's behavior, the words need to be mellowed and softened with gentleness. That's what the Bible says, and I believe that's what the songwriter is saying here. He says, proving all his service sweet. So I'd like to spend just a little bit of time about the tongue. I want to read some scriptures over in 1 Peter, the 3rd chapter. Maybe for time's sake we won't be able to just talk a lot about each one of these, but I'd like to go to 1 Peter, the 3rd chapter, and begin reading in the 8th verse. It says, finally be ye all of one mind, having compassion one of another. Love as brethren. Be pitiful. Be courteous. I'd like to say this probably implies gentleness. Not rendering evil for evil or railing for railing, but contrariwise, blessing, knowing that ye are thereunto called, that ye should inherit a blessing. For he that will love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil, and his lips, that they speak no guile, no deception. Let him eschew evil. Stay away from it. Avoid it. Let him and do good. Let him seek peace and ensue it. For the eyes of the Lord are over the righteous, and his ears are open unto their prayers, but the face of the Lord is against them that do evil. Now I'd like for us to go back to the book before this in James, the 3rd chapter. And I begin to read the 2nd verse. It says, for in many things we offend all. If any man offend not in word, the same is a perfect man, and able to bridle the whole body. Behold, well, we'll skip down to the 5th verse. We don't need to read about horses. Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasteth great things. Behold, how great a matter a little fire kindleth. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members, that it defileth the whole body and setteth on fire the course of nature. And in a set of fire of hell. But every kind of beast and of birds and serpents and of things in the sea is tamed, and hath been tamed of mankind. But the tongue can no man tame. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. Therewith bless we God, even the Father, and wherewith curse we men, which are made after the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. I'm glad the verse don't stop there. It says, my brethren, These things ought not so to be. It is not conducive to Christian behavior. That's what he's saying. This is not the way it needs to be. There is a higher calling. If we talk nice to those that we just naturally are disposed to be friendly to, and those that we're not, that we have a little bit of difficulty with, if we begin to reject and curse, we use very derogatory terminology for someone that we just don't feel, we just don't gravitate to naturally, he says that's not the way it ought to be. Christian behavior. David said, what did he say? He said, Lord, let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord. All right? Let's just end the thought about the tongue by asking us this. What kind of behavior does our tongue display? Does it demonstrate Christ? What do you think about that? You know our behavior. David said in his poem there, he said, not only let the words of my mouth, but the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight. So what kind of behavior is demonstrated by what's in our heart? I'd like for us to turn to Proverbs, the 4th chapter, and read the 23rd verse. Proverbs chapter 4, verse 23. The writer here says, keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. Your heart, your spirit, your soul. Keep your inner man, because out of it, keep it with diligence. That means be careful, because out of it are the issues, the thing that are demonstrated to those around me. The people that observe my behavior are seeing what's down in my heart. You get to know me on a first acquaintance, there's an impression made. But you come to work with me every day. You live with me in the same house. You see me Sunday after Sunday, service after service in church, and you start noticing my behavior. You start recognizing there is behavioral characteristics here, and you start making some conclusions about what's in my heart. Alright? Let's go to Mark, the 12th chapter. In Mark chapter 12, we want to read beginning in verse 29. It says, and Jesus answered him, the first of all the commandment is, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord. And thou shalt love the Lord with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind, and with all thy strength. This is the first commandment. And the second is namely this, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. There is none other commandment greater than these. And the scribe said unto him, well, master, thou hast said the truth, for there is no one God, and there is none other but he. You know the verse that was used when Anita and I got married? The minister used this verse 31. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. And he told us, that's the closest neighbor you're ever going to have. You know, when you live with someone as your spouse, as your companion, you're going to find out what their behavior is really like. You know, other people can say, well, he behaves like a Christian. But there may be some things about him as a spouse that you don't feel like is very Christian-like. All right? It's the closest neighbor you're ever going to have. And Jesus said that we should love the Lord with all our soul, mind, spirit, our whole being. Why? Why should we do that? Proverbs said, keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. Out of it becomes our behavior. We want our behavior. David said, Lord, let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight. If the words of my mouth, the meditation of my heart, what am I thinking about? You ever daydream? Have you ever been in a place and your mind is really somewhere else? Have you ever been in church and your mind was somewhere else? I know you have. I've been there too. We've all been there when maybe there was something pressing on our minds and pressing on our spirits. And it wasn't that we wanted to be disrespectful, but we were just overwhelmed with something else and we were really somewhere else in our head. We've all been there. But David said, let the meditation of my heart. I had an algebra teacher, I've told you this before, if he caught you not really paying attention and asked you a question and you was kind of lost in the lesson or whatever, he would say, aha, I caught you chasing rabbits. His mind, the student's mind was somewhere else, see? But if our mind, if our meditation, if we're is focused on the Lord, it's acceptable in the Lord's sight, if we have allowed ourselves to cultivate loving the Lord with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength, then we're going to be able to exhibit behavior that's Christ-like. Okay? I'd like to go to Luke, the 6th chapter, 43rd verse. Luke chapter 6, in verse 43, it says, for a good tree bringeth not forth corrupt fruit, neither doth a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. For every tree is known by its own fruit. For of thorns men do not gather figs, nor of bramble bush gather they grapes. A good man, out of the good treasure of what? Of his heart. David said, let the meditation of my heart be what? Acceptable. He said, a good out of the heart bringeth forth he which is good, and an evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is evil. For the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. Out of the issues, he says, Proverbs said, keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it comes the issues, the behavior of life. Luke said here that out of the abundance of the heart, or coming out of this, out of the good treasures of the heart, you're going to have good things come out of it. Good behavior. See? May the Lord help us. Micah 6 and 8. You know what that says? Somebody can quote that for me. He has shewed thee, O man, what doth the Lord require of thee, but to do justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God. How do you exhibit that kind of behavior? You're going to have the meditation of your heart acceptable in the sight of the Lord. If you begin to meditate and daydream and think about things that are not acceptable in God's sight, then your behavior is going to betray that sooner or later. Sooner or later, it's going to come out. So, I have to ask, is our behavior that's manifested by what's in our heart Christ-like? We need to answer that for ourselves. In Revelations 2, in verse 17 it says, hear, he that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches. To him that overcometh will I give to eat of the hidden manna. He that hath an ear, let him hear. There is a behavioral trait that is exhibited by what we listen to. He says, if you will, he that hath an ear, let him hear. I used to tell the boys, and I will occasionally tell them, if you'll listen to me, if you'll watch me, you might learn something. I used to tell them that when they were real little. Now that I can learn things from them a lot of times. But so Notice what it says in Proverbs chapter 2, in verse 22, I believe. But Proverbs 2, verse 2. Notice what the writer says here. So that thou incline thine ear unto wisdom and apply thine heart to understanding. So Revelation said, he that hath an ear, let him hear. The writer in Proverbs says, incline thine ear unto wisdom. What does it mean to incline your ear? I want you to know that I am coming to the age that I need to incline my ear. There was a time that if somebody was saying something real soft and low across the room, I probably could hear what they said. But it don't always happen like that now. Sometimes I get in a vehicle on the job, and or somebody says, "You hear that?" "Nope, I don't hear it." Sometimes I can be a trial on my wife because I said, "What did you say?" Maybe she repeats it a couple times, and I said, "I'm sorry, I still did not understand what you said." And it's because I have sometimes I don't feel like I'm really hard hearing, but maybe I am. Sometimes I have to really focus and incline my ear. What are they saying? All right? So the writers here are encouraging us to incline our ear to what? To wisdom. That's a behavioral characteristic that we ought to have. Revelation says, he that hath an ear, let him hear. You're going to have to choose to listen. Right? That's a behavioral characteristic. All right? In Proverbs, the 7th chapter, in the 24th verse, he says here, 7 and 24, "Hearken unto me now, therefore, O ye children, and attend to the words of my mouth." Here again, he's encouraging someone to listen. It's a characteristic, it's a behavioral trait that we should have as a Christian, to cultivate the ability to listen, especially to wisdom and what the Lord has to say. But we could choose to listen to other things. Let's go to 1 Kings, the 19th chapter. Familiar story over here in 1 Kings 19. First Kings 19, we'll begin reading, I think, in verse 12. It says, "After the earthquake, the fire." Let's go up a little bit before. "And he said, go forth and stand upon the mount," verse 11, "before the Lord. And behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind rent the mountains and brake in pieces the rock before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. After the wind, an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a still small voice. And it was so, when Elijah heard it, that he wrapped his face in his mantle and went out and stood in the entering of the cave. And behold, there came a voice unto him and said, what dost thou hear, Elijah?" If we're going to hear what the Lord has to say to us, we're going to have to incline our ear. We're going to have to cultivate a behavioral characteristic of listening for the Lord. Learning how to listen to it. But you know, we have a choice as to what we're going to listen to. You know, you can have a behavior of listening to everything else that goes on. You can listen to the earthquake and the wind and the fire, and all those are much more demonstrative than the still small voice. And there is a lot of noise in this world around us. We can begin to listen to world events. We can begin to listen to the news happenings. We can listen to the voices of society around us that's screaming and hollering and making lots of demonstrations. And we can become all distraught in our own emotions. We can become distraught in our perspective of what life is all about and all of those things, and we cannot hear the still small voice. We can choose to listen to the words of songs that can be very disruptive to our emotions and our behavior. I have the misfortune of working in an environment where they play a radio that they don't ask me what I would like to listen to. And many of you have been in that environment. If you're working in an area that's your own space and you're not interfering with anybody else and you can listen to what you want to, I want you to know you're blessed. Because many of us work in environments, we may be in someone else's house, we may have co-workers, we may be riding with somebody and they're the ones that it's their vehicle and all of this kind of thing, and they may be wanting to listen to something that we don't really care to hear. And they play, there's one song in particular, I think is a theme song of this radio, and every time it comes on, it just annoys me. It grates, it's offensive to me. And there's something that starts wanting to rise up in me every time I hear that. But I'm telling you, we can choose as a whole what we listen to. We can choose what we meditate on. And may the Lord help us that we choose to listen to the things, incline our ears to the wisdom of the Lord. And choose to meditate on the things that's going to be acceptable in His sight. Because I want my behavior to be something as a Christian that people looking on can say, I know for sure what a Christian is. And they're not confused. The world needs that desperately. There's many people that's got the sign, but it's just a facade. It's not real. They got a sign that says, I'm a Christian. But they don't have behavior that backs it up. So what am I talking about? What am I meditating on? What am I listening to? Is it acceptable in the eyes of the Lord? This is very important for us. I'd like for us to look a little bit about our eyes. In Psalms 103, talking about Christian behavior. And it doesn't matter what your age is, what your gender is, or anything else. I believe all of this applies to everyone that would profess to be a Christian. In Psalms 101, in verse 3, it says, I will set no wicked thing before mine eyes. I hate the work of them that turn aside. It shall not cleave to me. I will not purposefully put myself in a position to where I have to look at the stuff that is contaminating my behavior. You know, we can become desensitized by constantly being exposed to things that are ungodly. When we go to our work environment, if we hear people, the first time we hear people take God's name in vain, the first time that we hear people use very derogatory terminology about other people and use all kinds of curse words and all that, the first time that we're ever exposed to that, it's a shock. But the more you listen to it, the first time you hear a woman curse like a sailor, all right. The first time I was ever in that environment, it was like, that was a shock to me. But when you get in an environment where you're exposed to that over and over and over again to it, you kind of get numb to it. You kind of tune it out. You don't use that terminology yourself, but it's not that big shock. It says, I will set no wicked thing before mine eyes. What do I choose to look at? I'm not talking about what we see in a passing glance to make sure we don't hit something or we're observant of our surroundings. That's not what I'm talking about. But what do I choose to spend time absorbing into my head? in my heart, in my spirit? Am I fascinated with some kind of video that I see? Am I fascinated with reading some kind of article? What does your eyes gravitate to? All right. May the Lord help us. We're talking about Christian behavior. It hits all of us. It's not a problem that's exclusive to any gender or any age or anything like that. What am I setting before my eyes? It's my choice. The things that I set in front of me is my choice. What am I choosing? Is it a Christian behavioral pattern? Is it acceptable in the eyes of the Lord? I would like to turn to Matthew, the 5th chapter, and read a verse over there. We all know this. This is not something earth-shattering or new to us. But in Matthew 5 and verse 28, we'll turn there and read it. Probably most of us quote it. But it says here, "But I say unto you that whoso looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart." I'm not as interested in the specifics as I am the context of this. I told you this is not gender specific. This verse sounds like it's gender specific. But I'm going to tell you, in the world that we live in here today, women and girls have to be just as careful about what you set in front of your eyes as men do. Yes. It's always been that way. But you can't feast on something that is inappropriate, that caters to the lust of the flesh, and be a Christian. Christian behavior is different than that. Pornography is wrong. However you want to take it, it's wrong. It is not conducive to Christian behavior. It'll rob your soul. If you get it on the internet, if you get it on the printed page, if you read it in a book, there is so much trash in books. You know, I like to read. But I am very, very afraid to pick up a book that's in somebody else's car and see what's in there.
Might be a Christian love novel.
I'm telling you, it seems like, I don't know if every other page has got some graphic depiction in it or not, but I'm going to tell you, it seems like anywhere I open some of those books, there is something there that's offensive, that I shouldn't be reading. And I have had to make it a purpose, and I don't mess with that. Why? Because it's something there. If I'm not careful, I'll be setting something before my eyes. And what we put in front of our eyes, our eyeballs and ears are the closest thing to our brain that there is. And when we see it in our eye, it goes right in our head. When we hear it with our ear, it goes right in our mind. And then we begin to meditate on that. And then it corrupts our heart and our spirit. And David said, "Lord, help the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord." What's our behavior exhibit? Does it exhibit Christianity? What am I allowing myself to look at? In Job 31 and verse 1, he says, "I made a covenant with my eyes." Have you made any covenants with your eyes? I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to look at that. I'm not going to open that page. I'm not going to turn this on. I'm not going to go to this website. We are inundated with advertisements. You go down the road, how do they can advertise anything from automotive repair to food to whatever. And it always has something that they want to catch your eye, see? And they use something because mankind is very susceptible to sensuality. The very first thing that mankind noticed when they displeased the Lord was that they didn't have clothes on. So all of the advertisements, the most powerful magnet for the eye is something that caters to sensuality. It's just a fact. So they advertise everything with undress. Men and women. It says, I've made a covenant with my eyes. We all have computers, or most all of us do. We all, nearly every one of us in some way or another, has to use the internet for our everyday lives. It's kind of like automobiles and everything else. And all of those advertisements that come, you can exclude, you can put safety devices in place on the internet to help protect you, but I'm going to tell you, you are going to have to choose what you set before your eyes. What advertisements do I click on? You're better off not to click on any of them. You never know what the next screen is going to come up. I'll make a covenant with my eyes. What's a covenant? I'm making vows. I'm making promises. I'm not going down that street. We're talking about Christian behavior, see? In 1 Timothy, the 4th chapter and the 12th verse, we'll read one more verse. First Timothy 4 and 12. It says here, let no man despise thy youth. But I told you we're going to try not to talk about age. So I'm going to say, let nobody despise who you are, whatever age you are. But be thou an example of the believers, whether you're the oldest or the youngest here tonight or today. May the Lord help us to be an example, that our behavior would be something that somebody would say, there's something different about those people. You know, I've met people before that said they were Christians, but there's something different about these people. There's something different about him. There's something different about her. Their behavior... You remember when they were asking Peter if he knew Jesus? You remember one of the things they said to him? They said, your speech betrayeth you. Does our speech betray us? Does it betray us as a Christian? Or does it betray us as a non-Christian? Does it let others know what's in our heart? What is our actions? Let me read this verse. It says, let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers in word. Here goes that tongue again. In conversation, in your actions, in your deeds. In charity. This charity is the same word, same Greek word that's in the First Corinthians 13, where it talks about charity suffereth long. It's translated from the Greek word agape. It means affection. It means love. How's your love? Does it exhibit the love of Christ? You know, Christ died for you. Every one of us. Overheard a conversation of somebody spewing out the opposite of love towards some of their family on the job here recently. They're making comments about it. They're talking about their brother-in-law. Said if he's on fire, I wouldn't even put him out. That's not love. You know, he says here, be an example of the believers in charity, in love. And if you feel like that you're loving enough, and you don't have to love anymore, I'm going to stop and think about it. Christ died for you while you was ungodly. Just keep that in mind. Be an example in the Spirit. You know, you can say the right things, you can do the right things, but you can exhibit a wrong spirit in faith. And your steadfastness to live for God and your confidence is your faith an example of the, does our behavior in faith, what does it exhibit? Impurity. Is your motives pure? Are they sincere? Are they free from anger and malice? What does our behavior exhibit? So I just want to leave us with these thoughts today. Behavior. You know, we got a choice. David chose to exhibit behavior that made people think he'd lost his mind. And it got him off the hook. My behavior is my responsibility. You pray for me.